Welcome to this month's edition of Live Culture. That was a selection from the film Babette's Feast, Dinner Preparation 2 by Per Norgaard from 2009. This month, I'm delighted to have as my guest designer and artist Nick Fasciano, who's going to share his epic story of friendship, art, craftsmanship, and an unfailing belief in the worth of a beautiful large-scale mural called Gastrotypographical Assemblage. Nick, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi.
Good morning, Martha.
Good morning. So this story spans decades and changes in technology and involves several important institutions and a virtual scavenger hunt. And we're beginning in 1966 here. Can you talk a little bit, since we're on the radio, about the assemblage and talk us through what it is and what it's made out of?
Yes, the assemblage is basically made out of wood, designed by Lou Dorsman when he was the design and advertising director at CBS. The new building had a large wall in the cafeteria, and Lou suggested to Frank Stanton that something that looked like a California job case, but huge and filled with food words and objects, would be appropriate.
And so, can you talk a little bit about what a California job case is? Because the finished effect of the piece is a gigantic word poem about food.
Well, the job case was the predecessor of Linotype, and it was a wooden box, usually rectangular, with a lot of smaller inner boxes or inner squares that had type. Mm-hmm. And a typesetter would know that much as we would know a typewriter board or a keyboard. And he would pick, probably with a tweezer, a letter, a lowercase e from a particular little cubicle in that box and would compose type.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not quite sure why it's called a California job case, but that's what it's been known for my whole lifetime.
Okay, and the kind of look of this has been used subsequently for other kinds of design projects, but is this the first time that using the California job case as a kind of structure for making an assemblage has been done?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's sort of Mondrianish in a way. You know, it's very geometric, and that was a point of departure. I mean, it really was an interpretation of a job case. So because most of those had very small chambers, this had expansive ones, and basically it was divided in nine sections. There were nine panels that spanned 33 feet long and just over 8 feet high. And each panel had subdivisions which sort of framed individual words or phrases. And then collectively, those divisions and framing worked for the whole unit.
I also see the relationship between this and Louise Nevelson's work, which also has these kind of boxes with objects, monochromatic. The entire mural, it does have spots of color where there's artificial food and a few items like neon and some tin cans, but most of it's wood and it's white. It's monochromatic.
Yes.
And there's something like, is it right, 1,650 individual letters and 65 food-related objects, and it's 8 feet tall and 33 feet long. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah, correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 1,650 is an approximate, but
right, that's fine.
no less than that.
Right, and the whole
and the objects. The 65 also is there's a qualifier. For instance, there's a segment of tin cans that has probably 100 tin cans within that square or collection, so that the groupings are, there are 65 of those, but within those, for instance, there are two salsa bottles and bins with peas and beans. So there are multiples, but I tried counting them and I came up with 65.
Oh, so one can look at it online. There's a number of two YouTube videos. There's one from CBS when it was installed in CBS, and then there's one that was put together by the Culinary Institute of America about its restoration. So interested people can look online and see it. But let's go back a little bit to talk about the culture of CBS in the first place and Lou Dorfman's place in it, because the building that was designed, which you were calling Black Rock, was designed by Eero Saarinen, and it was an incredibly important, beautiful building. And is it William Paley who is the director of CBS?
Yes, and founder.
And founder. Yes. And he obviously valued having high-quality design everywhere in the building.
And absolutely. They were meticulous. He and Frank Stanton, who was the vice president, were relentless in their pursuit of excellence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great opportunity for designers, directors. Lou was totally supported by them and contributed greatly to the culture of CBS.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond the design, he had marketing skills and participated in program structure. And once the Mary Tyler Moore Show was had dropped viewers, and
mm-hmm.
Lou came up with the idea of having Walter Cronkite come in as a walk-on, and it was a great success, and it sort of got people thinking about the show again, and I
right.
think the ratings went up.
Well, and also he was responsible for so many different kinds of things. So he was working physically on developing the sets themselves, but as I understand it, he designed everything from the elevator buttons, the exit sign. He did not design the I logo, but he did the typeface. So it's just a huge amount of influence, and you yourself, you're a graphic designer, but you also, your specialty is kind of doing things in three dimensions, carving and so forth, and you did a number of three-dimensional, large-scale pieces throughout the building, is that right?
Correct, yes, yeah. We did walls and conference rooms, a teak map of the world,
mm-hmm.
very meticulously made. And we did lots of things within the building for Columbia Records,
mm-hmm.
and even over at the Broadcast Center, we did a huge clock for 60 minutes, a stopwatch
mm-hmm.
that clicked so loud we had it that the secretary nearby couldn't stand it. So I got a call and said, "Come in, we got to turn it off."
I turn off the clock,
but. But the idea was to make it, you know, realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And we also did a large sun, a gold leaf sun, I think it was about 5 or 6 feet in diameter, for the Sunday morning news show,
mm-hmm.
which was in the lobby at the Broadcast Center. So Lou afforded me great opportunity, and I did work for CBS for probably, you know, 35 years, all the years
right.
that Lou was there.
And, this is something that kind of wouldn't happen now, this sort of level of attention to detail and handmade murals in every important room. And so that somewhat goes to explain why there was this incredibly extravagant assemblage food poem going up in the dining room there, because it's an incredibly extravagant piece. It's also it's all about the wonders of food, and it reads really fabulously. And the people who made it, I should point out, are some of the great designers and typographers of the era. So let's talk about the cast of characters involved in this project.
Okay,
it was Lou and Herb Lubalin, is that right?
Herb Lubalin, correct.
And he did all of the type, along with Tom Cassese?
Lou did some preliminary sketches,
mm-hmm.
and Herb refined them along with Tom Carnese.
Mm-hmm. Carnese, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, and they were responsible for the final letter forms,
mm-hmm.
Along with John Alcorn, who
right.
did some illustration and
right.
some lettering.
He did, yeah.
And,
cans
and then those designs were turned over to a fellow by the name of Stanley Glaubach, who had
mm-hmm.
a shop in Lower Manhattan, and he and his crew cut all these letters and shapes and so on out of pine
mm-hmm.
and poplar,
mm-hmm.
and they glued everything together and glued it onto these panels.
Mm-hmm.
And so the result was, and then painted everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was installed at CBS.
Right, and your part was to, there are several beautifully carved elements. There's feet that are crushing grapes, and there's a hand holding an egg. And you are the person originally who made those elements.
Yes. The hand with the egg was carved from a solid block of mahogany, and the purpose was on the original wall where the mural was, there had to be access behind the wall because there was a glass window wall behind.
Oh.
So it actually originally it was a doorknob.
I couldn't figure out why you kept saying it was a doorknob when I spoke to you the other day. Now I understand. Okay, I thought, I was like, you could carve anything you want. Why would you need to take a pre-made object? Okay, I understand.
Right. So the far left panel was a door. It looked like all the other panels. I think it was slightly narrower than the others. But it when you turn the handle, when you turn the hand with the egg in it, it pivoted, and you could they could access behind the wall, and so we've incorporated that into the final. It's no longer a door,
right?
But we took the mechanism out of the wrist, but it's now adhered to the panel,
right? During its restoration.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that's really interesting to me about this mural, it went up in 1966,
correct?
And it was there until around 1989, 1990.
Yes, around, I think, 1990. Yeah.
Okay. Well, one of the things that when you first look at it, the look of it, including the sort of California Case style of putting text and images together, is that it's so iconic. There's been so many pieces made like this afterwards that it sort of feels like you've already seen it before, except that you start looking and the quality and the level of play. And it's just incredibly, marvelously poetic and funny and full of life. And you realize that this is the first one. This is it.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what your favorite parts are? I've had some of my favorites, but
okay. Well, yeah. Just to respond to part of your comments, the level of design it was thought out to the very smallest part of it. I've gotten images from the Netherlands and Italy of things that people have tried to imitate, and they there's just not this talent that went into that.
Oh no, it's definitely the original one. I meant the initial glance when you first just sort of look at it feels familiar because it's such a used way of doing things now. It was so popular.
Yeah.
And what's shocking to me about that, or shocking maybe isn't quite the right way of saying it, but what's surprising is that a mural that went up in a building where presumably a lot of people saw it, they're going up into the dining room, but it's not like it was out in the public. For it to have such a wide-reaching resonance design-wise is it's a testament to its makers.
Yeah. I think so, and I think the legacy, the attention that it got after it was removed was intense. I mean, there was what started the whole ball rolling was there was a magazine article about save this, classic icon that I had nobody called here, and it appeared. And
but this was in 1989. It appeared, and then you found out about it.
No, it was I'm sorry. It was probably 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, but from about 10 years ago till where we finally got it installed, there was intense several publications that were interested in saving it.
Mm-hmm.
Design Within Reach featured it in its catalog, and this other magazine as well. So, anyway, it continues to have a legacy.
Oh yes,
and I think forever now that it's at the Culinary.
Right, and that's what we're gonna. I have to stop us for a minute for a station ID. But basically, it was there until 1989, and when we continue our story, we are going to find out what happened in 1989.
Great.
So,
okay.
You are listening to WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5, excuse me, FM, and online at wpkn.org. This is Live Culture. I'm Martha Willette Lewis, and I'm in discussion today with artist Nick Fasciano about his long-lived relationship with the mural Gastrotypographic Assemblage.